first item.
Item number one, Org Unit 1150, Department of Administrative Services, Risk Management, page 127.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Supervisors.
Go ahead, Ms.
Okay. Thank you for your time this morning. Don Tyler, and I'm the Director of Administrative Services. And to my right is Dennis Deacher, who's our Interim Director of Risk Management. He's actually in a suit and tie today instead of a vest and a hard hat. And then to my left is Julie Esch, who is my deputy. I just want to mention before I get going is that we made a little bit of a modification organizationally. Risk management during the tenure of Craig Kamholz was reporting up to fiscal. This area now is reporting up to me directly in my effort to try to get a better sense of what we've got going on in risk management. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And as a result of that, I'm going to give a little bit of an overview and then open it up for your questions. So I just want to begin by highlighting a few of the changes to the budget, and then we'll take your questions from there. First, risk management is responsible for providing a comprehensive risk management program to minimize the county's property and casualty liabilities and ensure the health and safety of employees, residents, and guests utilizing our facilities. One aspect of that is through excess liability insurance. Historically, we've maintained about $1.5 million deductible, though our actual costs over the last 10 years have been far less than that, have actually averaged about $816,000. Due to the general reduction of both staff and facilities, our paid-out claims have declined from 135 in 2003 to 71 in 2012. So what we did was look at increasing the deductible anywhere from $3 million to $5 million and determined that now raising it to $3 million is the more conservative approach. Again, it's currently at $1.5 million, so what we're proposing is that we will increase that minimum deductible to $3 million. This creates a budget savings of approximately $200,000. Just as a side note, this is something that we also discussed with the comptroller, and the comptroller did not raise any concerns. Additionally, risk management is funding $50,000 or is proposing to fund $50,000 specifically for the use to find the most effective way to reduce documented misuse of FMLA. We've yet to determine our course of action, and we're working with HR on this initiative. Finally, for various reasons, the budget calls for transferring the administration of workers' compensation to a third-party provider, or a TPA. Using a TPA for administration of employee benefits and support services is not uncommon, even in a county structure, like Milwaukee County itself. For example, we currently use outside administrators for our health care services through United Healthcare and Great West Life for our deferred compensation program. The fact is, of the 42 Wisconsin counties and cities who self-insure, there are only two that continue to administer the program in-house. There's good reasons for this. The first is scalability of specialized expertise is probably the biggest driver. It's extremely difficult for even an organization our size to staff and manage the administrative, medical, insurance, and legal expertise within a group processing less than 700 claims a year. As a result, our efforts have focused almost entirely on administration. which means that there's been little or no diligence around investigations and medical second opinions, leaving the door wide open for both abuse and substantially more payouts. County staffing has contracted over the past two decades, or has compressed over the past two decades, and is projected to contract in the future as BHD gravitates to a new model. This has dramatically reduced workmen's compensation claims from 2,100 in 1993 to less than 600 in 2012. While the county claims have reduced to one-third of what they were, the three-person staff of adjusters has remained the same over this 20-year period. As such, as confirmed by an independent audit, we are overstaffed and recommended one reduction in 2013, but the board chose to retain that position. Even with this current staffing, the county has been placed on notice by the State Department of Workforce Development, noting that we've been significantly out of compliance for timely reporting, and as a result, we're required to construct a remediation plan in which they are actively monitoring. It's important to note that they have made it clear to us that this ongoing issue, and it is ongoing, by the way, will no longer be tolerated. The consequences of losing our self-insure ability is huge, and one that we have to take most seriously. Retaining a TPA with scale, expertise, and clear standards would be a welcome sign for the state. Finally, using a TPA will afford the county the opportunity to align approximately $640,000 to other core services of the community, for the community. We achieve this through a combination of a reduction in claims payouts, the elimination of two positions, offset with the cost of retaining a TPA. As difficult as it is for me, and I know for you, to consider eliminating these two positions, the individuals within them are retirement eligible. So that's a recap, and I'm sure you've got some questions regarding risk management. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Tyler. Supervisor Cullen, and Level West.
Could you, I don't know if you have that written testimony for us. Copies, do you have that for us?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I can make the written testimony available. Okay. It's just my notes.
Yeah. What was the part about it's been reduced by a third or to a third of the amount of the claims exactly or something?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Supervisors, our claims in 1993 were approximately 2,100. Through the years, because of better safety measures and also just a general compression or contraction of the number of employees in the county, it's gone from 2,100 in 1993 down to around 600 in 2012, which is basically one-third of what it was in 1993.
And you expect that trend to continue?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, we have noticed that around 2008, 2009, that time period, the decline has started to flatten out. It's still declining, but it's starting to flatten out. We would suspect with, the BHD business model gravitating to more of a community-based care and a reduction in staffing there, our decline will probably continue, but not to the degree that it has over the last 10 years.
So then, do I take it that this Executive Director 2 Risk Manager is sort of oversees the department?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I think the answer to that is yes, if that's the title that I want to make sure. Yes.
So this person will go from overseeing 6 people to 4 people? Did you consider getting rid of that position or downgrading that person's pay grade?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I think that is a good question and something that we would look at if this progressed.
Why didn't you look at it? I mean, it seems like you assume that everything progresses generally in this budget. Why didn't you assume that would progress and do that?
I think Josh can enlighten us.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, the risk manager would obviously continue to have all the other day-to-day risk management duties and would also have to oversee this third-party administrator as a manager. So it's not like this function goes away from this position. It's just a different service delivery model.
No, we've gone from 2,100 claims in 1993 to 600 claims in 2012. We're willing to cut the staff by two, but I assume that this position has not been downgraded since 1993, even though we've gone to that. Would that be correct, do you think?
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, I would have to go back and look at the level that the position has been at, but as far as the change, you know, from the current model with the two positions, the sum of the duties doesn't change. So there's no change in the duties of the risk manager's position from the current model to the proposed model. You still have the responsibility for that workers' comp function. It's just that now the risk manager would be in charge of making sure that the contracted third-party administrator is fulfilling the terms and meeting the goals of reducing the cost.
So overseeing less people isn't reducing responsibility?
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment?
Sure.
Dennis Dietcher, interim director for risk, and I can tell you that in 2007 there was a position eliminated already from the department, and so we have decreased from the two positions down to the one already.
And that would be the deputy director?
That would have been the risk deputy coordinator at the time.
Supervisor Cullen, do you have any more questions? Supervisor Romo West and Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the Supervisor Cullen covered a lot of the thought process that I had as well. It seems to me that if you are in trouble with the state and you are not getting your work accomplished and the reporting done the way that they deem it necessary, that it would make more sense to try to rearrange the chairs on the deck versus throwing the chairs off of the deck. And so I don't know if that's something that you can revisit, but I think that would be preferable. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me to say that we're not accomplishing our goals, but yet we feel like all hands on deck isn't the way to go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'm going to defer to, I think, Julie Esch, because I think she understood a little bit better the question, and I apologize. But if I did not mention this, one of the things that came out in the independent audit, because of the decline in the number of claims, one of the observations that they had was that, you know, it wasn't the issue that we are having with the state isn't necessarily the fact that we're understaffed. It's just basically how we administer things. But, Julie, do you have something to offer?
Chairman and Supervisors, one of the things is it's not, as far as rearranging, you know, the chairs on the deck, there really isn't anything to rearrange at this point. It's really from a business perspective and the fact that a third-party administrator would have the ability to reach into a pool of employees to do some of the things that Don had talked about earlier, medical follow-ups, using physicians, nurses, staff that we don't have available to us. That's really where we're coming from with this recommendation. I hope that makes sense. So it's chairs that we don't have on the deck, and I don't see us, you know, adding them. Mm-hmm. It's using the resources of a third-party administrator that that we're looking to from a business perspective. And that's where a lot of businesses, governments, too, are going, because this is really such a more of a business function for the county. Does that help that?
Well, I appreciate that you can comprehend my question, at least. Thank you.
Supervisor Jersey?
Well, two questions. First of all, on the misuse of the Family Medical Leave Act, did you indicate that the FMLA issues are being changed to this department? I mean, this is the FMLA misuse is not new. That's been something that predates the current administration, something that this board has been aware of, and something that we've asked Ms. Mitchell to address. And it does seem to be something appropriate in the HR department, so I'm confused as to what you're talking about here. Maybe I'm misunderstanding it. You're putting all of these issues under risk management?
Mr. Chair and supervisors of the committee, FMLA is part of risk management at this point. We are working very closely in coordinating the management activities right now, and part of that effort is working with HR in looking at solutions relative to misuse. Right now, FMLA, the processing, is within risk management. I know it's my understanding that in previous years it was within HR. It's one of the things that we might explore down the road. But right now our focus is taking a look at various options and alternatives to mitigate the misuse. Like you said, it's been reoccurring through the years.
Aren't you kind of putting this backwards? I mean, risk management addresses claims. So if there's a misuse going on, they come in when there are claims being made. At least that's my understanding. HR hopefully is in a position to address the misuse before it occurs, before you'd ever get to a claims issue. Just that really doesn't make a lot of sense to me, that kind of an organizational structure. I don't understand why you're going to the department that addresses things after misuse has occurred in some respects.
And Chair, supervisors, it's one of the things that we're looking at.
Then the other thing that I'm, my other real concern here, and I went through the budget and saw this letter that was referred to dated September 9th, and I request, since we, as far as I know, haven't been informed of it by administration, I did go to the controller's office and ask if they had a copy of it, and they did, and they shared it with me. It does address some concerns and basically states that you should prepare a written corrective action plan and submit it to the division within 35 days. This letter is dated September 9th. The response is due tomorrow. Now, embedded in this letter, at least in my opinion, is some policy directive. And I, as far as I know, and I did ask the finance chairs, I don't know that this has been referred to finance committee, that this is something your executive branch thought to discuss with policymakers. I recall this was in the budget last year. And if this is something that you just want to play politics with, then we're not going to get too far on it. If you truly are looking for the policymakers in government to be a partner in this with you and to take some legitimate restructuring comments that you just made seriously, then treat us as partners. You don't make policy. We make policy. And here's another example where you are sitting on a directive from the department, State Department of Workforce Development, indicating there's a problem and asking for some corrective action, which I believe has some policy implications to it, and you've not made us aware of it, except it gets put as a footnote in the budget, basically, or a small comment. I just don't appreciate your approach here. You may be making some very valid comments, and we should be looking at it. But not this way. You should be bringing this to finance. And I'm going to ask, and I did ask the chairs, this finance committee is going to take place this month, correct? Has this been referred to your committee? And I would like to suggest that we get this referred to finance committee before we make any decisions with regard to this kind of restructuring we're talking about. And I think I did send both of you the copy of the letter that I received. But this should have been referred to finance. It's a policy issue.
So, Supervisor Jerzyk, you're asking to have as an item on the agenda discussion of the audit?
Please refer the Department of Workforce Development, I'll make this as a motion, The Department of Workforce Development letter dated September 9th requiring a responsive corrective plan from the county within 35 days, which, by the way, for the record, is tomorrow, October 15th, that the Finance Committee should review and have the department discuss what kind of response they're going to give to the Department of Workforce Development within that 35-day. Well, it's going to be late, unless they've given a response without bringing it to us. And the Finance Committee should have an opportunity to explore that issue before we take any action. So I will ask that this be referred to Finance Committee for a response with that, with regard to that September 9th letter. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Director Deacher?
Yes.
You've indicated to me that you were looking toward a corrective action plan among your staff members.
Yes.
Did you forward such an intent to the Department of Workforce Development?
The answer is yes, and that has been done through Director Tyler, who can comment further.
Do what? Well, how did it happen, sir? I didn't hear the report.
Oh, I said that has occurred, and it has been done through Director Tyler, who can comment further.
Director Tyler, would you respond to not so much her request, Director Jerzyk's request, but it appears that if there has been a response sent, that response should be made available to the Finance, Personnel, and Audit Committee.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, yes, we put together a response. It was under my signature because, again, I felt that this was something that I should take responsibility for. So we formulated a remediation plan, and we're going to work through that remediation plan. That was based on my understanding that this is more of a operations and procedures and policies, and that's the way I looked at it, not policies but procedures, in terms of the things that we needed to do around this letter. So if this is policy, I apologize that I got ahead of myself, but I see this simply as an operations issue and making sure that we are complying with the operating procedures that we've been asked to do by the state. But we can certainly make this available to you. It was sent out on October 8th.
Supervisor Jerzyk?
Well, for the record, I really think letters like this should be made available to policymakers. I will reserve opinion on whether your responsive letter, and I would ask Mr. Chair that the Finance Committee also receive that. We'll see if that's just strictly a procedural issue. I understand the board should not get involved with strictly administrative functions, and believe me, I don't want to. I don't want to be an administrator. I'm not here to do that. But I do think there's policy in here. And I believe that because you put it in the budget for change, a policy change. So we'll see whether your responsive letter involved policy. And if it did, I am definitely going to weigh in on what you did because you have got to start working with the policymakers so we can start moving forward together. And I don't think your administration has done that in the past. I really don't. I'm trying to just be as straightforward about that as I can. There are just too many times you act like this board is just not here to in any way weigh in on policy before you take administrative actions. So I won't say any more. I think Finance Committee has to look at this.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Borkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what bothers me is the things that are not being said, okay? Why are we having an inordinate number of workmen's comp or sick leave or whatever? And I think that if you go back and find that there are like three areas in county government, the sheriff, the House of Correction, and behavioral health, the majority of the instances are out of those three shops. Now, who's managing those shops? You're putting people at the back end with these claims that are going to fail because the workload is huge. It's not fair to those people. And yet, you know, we sit here and say, well, we're going to cut this person, we're going to cut that person. How about at the front end with the people that are staffing? You got mandatory double shifts going on. It's not healthy. It's not safe. And nobody's talking about that because we're all too busy about, oh, we got all these claims, and so we want to outsource. How about managing those areas properly?
Supervisor Broderick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The backlog that my colleague has just referred to of workman comp claims seems to me to be the product of self-evident mismanagement. Given a summary dismissal of the department head that they hired, unless, of course, they dispute that characterization, now we're blaming the victims and eliminating positions for administrative failure that was set up in a way that could only result in failure due to understaffing, in my opinion at least. That's a convenient rationale, as I see it, for outsourcing, but far from an accurate characterization of what's going on.
Thank you, Supervisor Robert. Any other committee members like to weigh in? Well, I would like to. Supervisor, you take right. The go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got some concerns. There was an independent audit of June 2012. Last year, there was in a proposed budget, the claims adjuster position would have been eliminated. I referred to the same type of DWD statistics last year in justifying restoring that position. Earlier this year, the risk manager decided that she would take the claims technician and provide her with work from the FMLA, from the Family Leave Medical Act section. Usually there are three people who work on claims. Usually it's the claims examiner, the claims adjuster, and the claims technician. As I said, last year I worked to restore that position, and I was excoriated about that, particularly by a former colleague and others who felt that as supervisors, we don't know what the heck we're doing. The managers know what they're doing, but it's implied that we're not paying attention to what is doing and want the best to happen for Milwaukee County and for Milwaukee County government and for the citizens of Milwaukee County. So early in the year, that claims technician, as I said, was assigned to FMLA. Another person had been hired in order to deal with the burden of FMLA. So you had two FMLA specialists, plus you had that claims technician working on FMLA. And then there were temps who came in to also do FMLA work. So whether it should be in risk management or whether it should be in human resources is something that can be debated. But it's my understanding that there was an RFP. Did you not let an RFP for FMLA?
Mr. Chair and supervisors, it is either an RFP or an RFI, and I'm going to look to see if Matt is in the room to get clarity on that.
Mr. Hanser? Oh, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, I'm Matt Hancheck. I'm the Director of Employee Benefits. Just for a little bit of explanation of my role in this and why I'm involved in the risk management budget at all, just by way of history, in the middle of 2012, the risk manager approached Human Resources and at that time had inquired about moving the function to risk management to take advantage of some synergies between the workers' comp function and FMLA. At that point, we agreed and turned over management to risk, and it continued on with risk management through the 2013 budget. Upon Ms. Van Pelt's departure, Human Resources was engaged again to address the FML function, at least if nothing else as a caretaker role, while the search continued for a new risk manager. That's from a day-to-day operations standpoint. The oversight's being provided by my benefits manager, Heather Geisa, and reporting up through me. Now, as part of our due diligence in this, we've been looking into some of the issues that we're seeing regarding the processing of claims, timely processing, accuracy, and whether or not we're doing our due diligence on the amount of time people are being granted or the validity of their claims. And frankly, what we're seeing is that for a centralized HR function with the type of volume that we're having on FML claims, that whether this was two people internally or two and a half, or however you would like to look at it, it simply did not have the staff resources to be successful. So what we did with this is that we did release an RFP for basically exploratory reasons. I know what the pricing looks like in the market for a group with what I would consider normal activity on FML, but we are so far removed from the normal volume of claims that I would expect to see on a group this size that, frankly, I didn't have any idea what the market would bear. So it was done basically exploratory, contingent upon board approval of a contract, in order to get some answers back to the board and to policymakers as what the utilization looks like and what the cost would look like if we explored this as an option. What I can say with 100% certainty is that no decision on outsourcing has been made. This is something that I released to get some more information. Could I have done it as an RFI? Yes, but I'm not sure that we would have gotten the same level of responses back or the same seriousness from the industry. But it's something that I took upon myself to get some more information and come back to policymakers with. What I'm certain of at this point is that more resources or a different delivery model is going to have to take place, regardless of who's managing it, whether it's in human resources or whether it's in risk management. One way or another, we're going to have to dedicate a better approach to working with FML claims. We're averaging, off the top of my head, in 2012, about 3,200 claims. We're trending towards about 3,800 this year. So that's nearly one FML claim per active employee. And I have never seen utilization like that and, frankly, don't know where to price it.
Thank you, Mr. Hanchek. It's good to know that. It's good that it's an RFI. You're looking to be exploratory to get information, and I appreciate that. Now, with respect to the workman's compensation shop, as Director Tyler's indicated, there may be a need for to have a nurse attached so that medical information can be more robust. That part I do understand. But keep in mind, last year, that the direct risk manager at the time wanted to get rid of one of those positions, and if that position had gone, given that the examiner had to take a medical leave and spend time vacation, et cetera, recuperating, whatever, then where would we be for the persons who have stayed, who had an opportunity to try to catch up? And now it's my understanding that the claims technician has returned to her usual duties. I think that we should go kind of slow. I understand the need to have some corrective action, but you've indicated that such a communication has occurred to the Department of Workforce Development, and we'll see how that goes. I don't think by January 1st, 2014, we would be in a position, well, depending on what this finance person on the audit committee does, as a first look, I don't anticipate that by January 1st, we would be ready to go to a third-party administrator. Now, that's just my opinion. It's just an opinion, given all that's happened in the past. And now it's been brought to our attention that FMLA is a monster, which really needs to be addressed. maybe what will happen or what could happen in the future is that from the limited space where the risk manager's shop is now, maybe it needs to move somewhere else. Maybe some other things need to happen. But that's just my opinion. And with respect to that letter from September or so of this year, as I said, I tried, at least last year, to keep that position in place so that we could go forward. And it appears because of illness, because of medical leave, maybe because the risk manager did not get her hands dirty by doing some of the claims work that shop got, that particular section in that shop got behind. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have to say for right now.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I fully understand what you're saying. I think there's a couple things there, if you don't mind. And it really relates to scalability. Supervisor, you had mentioned, and this is true, that it's a very small staff. And to the extent that you have medical leave or vacations, and these are all seasoned employees that have a lot of vacation time, you lose 40 or 50% of your capacity. And it's one of the reasons why you look to the outside in these cases where you can leverage that capacity through a larger administration. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, these adjusters know their business but don't have the ability necessarily to leverage the medical side of it like a third-party administrator can. And that, to me, is where the big opportunity is. So I'd just like to point that out. And then finally, I just want to go back to the fact that, again, we are processing one-third of the claims that we had in 1993 with the same level of staff that we had in 1993. In any small unit, you have individuals there that you want to share their resources. If one area is a little bit busier and the other area is not as busy, you want to share that individual's capability and use them as a resource, and that's what was going on with this technician throughout this year, recognizing that and confirmed in this independent audit and confirmed in our own standards that we established back in 1992 that the staffing compared to the number of claims that we are processing was overstaffed by one individual, and that's why the previous risk management director had recommended a reduction in one staff.
Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cady, now we're talking from 93 to 2013. I would like to have a number of county employees, particularly FTEs, for every year. And if I can get Mr. Dietcher, Deputy Director Dietcher, if I can get a number of the counts for the claims for every year, I understand. I understand what the Director Tyler is saying, but on the other hand, it's my understanding that the claims have gotten much more complex. I personally do recognize what he said with respect to the making the medical part more robust. But on the other hand, if you've got three people, and one is assigned to do something else, and for the other two, if there's a family emergency or if there's a medical leave in this particular case, then if the director herself is not stepping in to do some of the work, then that can become problematic. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't mean to belabor the point, but we're in a vicious circle, okay? And the vicious circle is that you only have X amount of employees who are working an inordinate number of hours, okay, that is not, in some cases, humanly possible, all right? And so then you've got policies in certain areas where if they have one absence or two absences, their job is at risk. And so the whole medical leave is actually used in some cases as a job protection, because they're working so much, they can't get any times off. They, you know, haven't had a weekend off in 3 months. Okay, so they finally break, and so instead of having to, you know, respond to why they're actually sick or whatever, they use the medical leave as a protection so that they don't have to lose their job. And I go back to my earlier statement, and that is, who is running these shops? That's where your issue is. You got the back end where you got these poor people that are overwhelmed. I don't necessarily blame employees for trying to protect their backsides. I'd do the same darn thing, and all of you would too.
You have the chair back, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Stanford. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is the status of hiring a new risk manager?
Mr. Chair and supervisors, the status of hiring a new director of risk management, we're well into the process. We have received, I think, what I would consider to be a very good pool of potential candidates, and we are establishing an evaluation panel, and that evaluation panel will be setting up interviews in the coming weeks.
Okay. And this third party, what type of company is it? What's their name? Who are they? Explain to me what they'll be doing.
Sure. Mr. Chair and supervisors, I'm going to actually look to see if Matt might be able to, being in this business, not directly in workers' compensation, but being in this business of outsourcing TPAs, I don't know if you can refer to any. I've got some information in here that I can make available to you after this meeting that outlines some of the third-party administrators. There are some that are based in Wisconsin, some based that have a national presence. Many of them you work for both agencies, government agencies, and as you probably know, most of the larger private companies use third-party administrators. Willis, for instance, is one of those third-party administrators. I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, Matt.
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, I somewhat indirectly have something to add. The FML RFP that's issued is a bit of a different beast than workers' comp. With FML, generally speaking, the vendors are going to be similar to the same types of vendors that would offer short-term disability coverage, for example, your Hartford's, MetLife, Unum's, that group. There's some overlap in the workers' comp field, but not necessarily a direct one-to-one. With regards to workers' comp, I haven't worked on the RFP with it, but the list that Mr. Tyler just shared is accurate. It's the same type of firms I'd expect to see in it. Willis would be one. Travelers is another very common one, but there's a number of smaller local firms, too, that locally Wisconsin-based that would also handle this type of work.
Okay. And we're looking for this third party to take the place of the two abolished positions, correct?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor, that is correct.
Okay. All right. And I see an appropriation for $50,000. Any particular reason for that?
Mr. Chair and supervisors, I'm going to ask Matt to expand on two things. First, as it relates to that $50,000 appropriation, again, it's related to FMLA. And then secondly, the abolishment of those two positions, again, gets us access to a third-party administrator that has great leverage in terms of our medical capabilities, you know, being as a resource.
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, with regards to the $50,000 on FML, I think it's really in recognition that two people operating a centralized FML function that has this type of volume working through it is not going to be adequate, and it's also in recognition that it's going to take some time for me to come forward with a recommendation on this. We'd recently experienced a pretty heavy backlog right after the fire, for example, of FML claims, where we had brought in people with FML background on a contract basis to help us catch up. I could see issues like that popping up while we are this leanly staffed and while we're still looking at a longer-term solution. Therefore, I felt it would be prudent to include some professional service money in the budget while we're working on an interim solution and trying to come forward with a longer-term solution. With regards to the clinical piece that Mr. Tyler mentioned, it's very important to recognize that part of the issue we have is the volume and the number of people dedicated to it. Another piece of it is the skill sets of the people that are currently in it. They're equipped to handle most of the processing and administration, but not necessarily the clinical side. Where a TPA, either in workers' comp or FML, is going to bring to the table clinical resources to actually challenge a physician's assertion rather than accept it at face value in terms of the time to return to work or duration of leaves and so on. And that's something that, frankly, we're just not equipped to do right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Supervisor. Mr. Director Tyler, we did talk about, you did talk about municipalities and looking at their experience. I'm very much interested in your looking at the experience of counties of a comparable size to Milwaukee County. I think that would be more important in as much as some of the same functions that occur here happen in other counties. So I would look toward you doing that, having a survey, trying to find out, getting some, gleaning some information as to what the experience is elsewhere.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, we'd be pleased to do that to kind of benchmark, beyond the state of Wisconsin, to look at counties of our size and see what they're doing.
I would appreciate that, since we are the largest county in the state.
That's correct.
State. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that you and others of us were criticized heavily last budget for not following the advice of the then risk manager. Now it's said that she was terminated. Can you confirm that that's what happened? Previously, I just heard she left, but today I hear she was terminated. Is that
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I didn't hear that she was terminated.
Okay, so you're telling me she left on her own volition without any suggestion that she leave, or that it's not true she was terminated?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I guess my approach is to keep personnel matters private for the benefit of the employee. So
she's not an employee.
The benefit of a former employee.
Okay. I don't know what that's supposed to do for my confidence. If in the past I was told to trust the expertise of the employee, and now I don't, and now I don't know whether the administration even had confidence in the employee, and then now I'm told to trust the administration on their recommendations, how am I supposed to assess that situation?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'm empathetic, and this is going to happen. It's happened in the past, and it's going to happen in the future. I'm empathetic to your desire and perhaps need to better understand some of these departures that happen. It's inevitable that they will happen, and I think it's important for the benefit of the employee. That the reason for that departure isn't necessarily in a public forum.
Well, if you'd
I
like
wish
to
I could do better on
forum,
that.
Then I'd encourage you to communicate it privately with me then, because somehow I should be able to get that information. Somehow others should be able to get that information.
Chairman and Supervisors, that information is not typically available to anybody other than typically the supervisor, maybe Corp Counsel and HR. So just respecting the confidentiality for the benefit of the employee. I wish I could do better.
I guess I would think that without discussing your reasons for terminating her, that you'd be able to confirm if you terminated her, or if it wasn't termination, that you would be able to clearly say that she left on her own of her own free will without encouragement. But
Supervisor Director Tyler indicated that she left, so we'll just. With respect to personnel matters, I understand what he's saying.
I don't know that he said it that clearly.
This is a public forum. That's what I heard. Maybe I misinterpreted.
I think it was a close person.
Director Tyler, would you repeat what you told us with respect to
Mr. Chair,
going away?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Supervisor, maybe Corp Counsel and HR, I think we have enforced my position on this in the effort to protect the confidentiality of the former employee.
All right. Another topic then.
Go ahead, Supervisor.
I think in the first statements were before the comptroller was in the room about the raising the deductible to the $3 million. If we could go back to that and spend some time on that, I'd like to understand that a little better. Given my sense that there have been a lot of really big claim issues in recent years, now maybe we haven't actually lost on those, but we've got a lot of stuff hanging out there. Whether or not that's the prudent decision, and if we could go a little into that, the reasoning for that and the analysis of that.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I think Dennis might be in a position, and maybe even if you want the comptroller to come up, you can weigh in on how we got to the decisions. I've got a schedule that can be made available to you that gives a range of what we've paid out or since 1998. And I'm just looking at it right now. The low was $353,000, and actually year-to-date 2013. The high was in 2002. $2,162. Actually, I take that back. In 1999, it was $3.5 million. So you can see
million?
on average, the 10-year average has been $816,265.
Director Tyler, excuse me. You have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, you
said $3.5 million in 1998?
That's correct.
1989, I'm sorry.
And this refers to the liability, not the workers' compensation, just to clarify.
Right. Supervisor, Supervisor Lipscomb.
The document you're referring to, is this something we have, or what were you citing? I'm sorry. I was having some trouble following.
Yes, I apologize. This is a schedule that I have in front of me as a reference. I can certainly make that available to you as well.
Okay. Has it been shared with County Board, fiscal staff, or
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'm not sure whether it has or not.
Okay.
I'm going to look to Mr. Fudge.
I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, it's not been shared yet, but we're certainly happy to.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, I was wondering if the comptroller had any comment about whether or not this was a suggestion that he actually endorses, or just one that he's neutral on, or where this falls.
For the excess liability insurance, we've taken a look at the last 10 years, and for that amount, we've increased it from the suggestion in the budget, and they talked to me about that, increasing it from $3 million to $5 million. And generally, we haven't been, we've been in the range of around $3 million, especially in the last, 5 to 6 years. And it hasn't been that much. And also what we do under the current accounting rules, if there is any excess that occurs in any 1 year, we'll reserve for that so that 1 year isn't harmed by another year's issue. So there's an actuary that looks at that each year to look at the dollar amounts and to make sure that we're properly covered. But I'll get my schedule and I'll compare it to theirs. I'm assuming it's coming from the same place. But I looked at it and I thought it was reasonable to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I just follow up on that particular point?
Yes. Supervisor Cullen?
Yeah, on that particular point, Mr. Mansky, did you say that, I'm reading the narrative and it says their deductible is increasing from 1.5 to 3 million. You mentioned something about 3 million to 5 million?
I read it wrong. I'm sorry. Okay. Moving it to the 3 million because we really haven't exceeded the 3 million at all.
So your comments stand. You were just
My comments stand. I apologize for that.
Thank you. Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you look at the last 10 years, is the numbers from the courthouse fire included in that data?
Chairman and Mr. Supervisor, the distinction that you brought up about the courthouse, that's a property insurance claim, so that's not part of our liability loss run.
Gotcha. All right. That's all I need. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.